informative. Of all the things that you talked about, the one thing I've noticed in the change of fashion is that the jean game is all over the place. The jean game is very diverse. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about your theme verse for this year, 2 Corinthians 12:9, and try to set that in context. I think somebody spoke about it a few weeks ago, maybe, but I'm going to try to zoom out a little bit and look at that verse in context to try to build out and hopefully encourage everything that's happening this year in Kindred. So I have a front row seat to see just what you guys are facing as moms, most of you with younger children at home. I watch Nicole have very little time for rest and very little break. But when, like, you can completely step back from all your responsibilities. Some of you are working outside the home and inside the home. Regardless, there's precious few opportunities when you can fully step back. And one of the things that causes strain and wear over time is all the constant pressure, not just from external responsibilities, but from what we feel others are thinking and feeling toward us, or the determinations and value judgments that they're making about our life, our decisions, etc. So I'm really glad you're leaning into 2 Corinthians 12, and I hope that this is useful in supporting it as you move forward through this year. So here's the question. How do we alter our perspective so that all the hard things in our lives become our friends? So how does the daily grind of that pressurized schedule become an ally to you in your life? How can that chronic pain be thought of as a helper, actually? How does a stressful relational conflict that won't end, how does it serve us? How can those persistent financial shortfalls that you're facing actually be a blessing? And if you're struggling with something like long-term anxiety, how does that become useful to us? Because in 2 Corinthians 12:9, Paul says that he can boast gladly and is content, or thinks well of, the weaknesses in his life. He thinks well of them. He can boast gladly in them. Sorry, I want to start my clock here. So he says that in his weakness, Christ's power actually rests on him. And he says that in his weakness, it's an opportunity for Christ to demonstrate strength, to show up in his circumstances, to show up in his weakness and actually deliver power and might. So how does he do that? And that doesn't mean that the hard things in our lives, the weaknesses in our lives, are necessarily things that we like. But Paul is still able to find a way to boast gladly in them, to think of them as friends. It's like physical therapy. Paul likes what the pain produces. He likes how the pain is working. Or like childbirth, Paul sees the blessing of what comes from the labor pains. So he's not necessarily liking the pain, but he's liking what happens through the pain. He's liking what happens in the weakness. He likes how Christ shows up in those things and provides power. So the simple main idea this morning is that we should expect Christ's power to show up in our weakness. We should expect it. We should anticipate, oh, this thing hurts. This thing's draining on me. I'm ready for Christ's power to be made manifest. So if you don't know Jesus, I'm praying that you see the surpassing worth of a relationship with him this morning, that Christian or non-Christian, we're all suffering from these weaknesses, and you can either suffer with Jesus or without him, but his grace will be sufficient. So two quick movements this morning. The first is our persistent weaknesses. I want us to see that the weaknesses in our life are varied, they're broad, and they're persistent. And then I want us to look at Christ's boundless power. So our persistent weaknesses, his boundless power. So here's your theme verse, 2 Corinthians 12. I'm going to start in verse 5, because we have to understand, Paul begins an argument in chapter 10 that he's continuing all the way to here. We'll talk a little bit about that without getting too tedious. But he says in verse 5, on behalf of this man is one who had heavenly visions. He had seen God's throne room. On behalf of this man I will boast, but on my own behalf I will not boast. Right? Paul also had heavenly visions. Paul also had this awesome vision of Jesus resurrected. But Paul said, I'm not going to boast except of my weaknesses. Though I should wish to boast, I would not be a fool, for I would be speaking the truth. So he has reason to boast, but he's not going to, except in his weakness. Because, verse 6, I refrain from boasting so that no one may think more of me than he sees in me or hears from me. He doesn't want to use his miraculous encounters to support his message. He wants his message to stand on its own. And the transformation of that message in his own life, he wants that to speak for him as well. So, verse 7, to keep me from being conceited. So this is why the weakness has come. To keep me from being conceited, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, the things I saw, a thorn was given to me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this thorn, that it should leave me. But Jesus said to me, my grace is sufficient, is enough for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. And for the sake of Christ, then, I'm content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Could somebody turn out these ones right here? Mm-hmm. It's doing something weird on the paper or my glasses. I can't tell. Yeah. Or maybe my eyes are getting older. Perfect.
Okay.
So let's, if you have the Bible on your phone or you brought one, or if not, it's fine. You don't need one, because I'm gonna read everything you need. So let's talk about our weaknesses. Paul has weaknesses, and the word here for weaknesses is frailty or calamity. Okay? Vulnerability. It's the weakening influence of hardships over time. We feel the weight of all of these cumulative hardships in our lives that look like a variety of things, and there's a weakening influence over time. We're just fatigued by them. There's a sense of frailty. The nearest context for what Paul is saying is this thorn or stake in the flesh that he mentions back in verse 7, that there's this thorn that was given to me, and we don't know exactly what it is. He's kind of mysterious, but it probably is some sort of spiritually dark influence in his life. Something that's opposing him. He calls it a messenger of Satan. We don't know if it's just, I don't know, some general result of the fall, like anxiety or fear or a stutter, or if it's something that's a little bit more spiritual in nature. But he doesn't seem to think that it's important for him to tell us what it is. It's just this thing that's causing tremendous weakness. And it probably is manifesting some way physically, because he talks about the same thing in Galatians chapter 4. It's something physical that other people can see. Now, he says it's useful for combating his pride, to keep him from being conceited. God, Jesus leaves this with him. And it's bad enough, he doesn't like it enough, that he pleads with Jesus to take it away. Please, take this thing away. And Jesus doesn't. So the nearest context of what weakness is back to this mysterious thorn in the flesh that other people can see. But if you zoom out a little bit further, we see there's a broader definition of weakness as suffering. So back in chapter 11, Paul writes and says, he's more autobiographical in 2 Corinthians than really anywhere else. And he's talking about these false teachers who are causing all sorts of problems in the Corinthian church. And they're making fun of Paul, and they're trashing him. And Paul is trying to make the case that his gospel is legitimate. And to do that, he's trying to make the case that he's a legitimate apostle, and therefore his content, his gospel, is legitimate. And so he says, are they servants of Christ, these other ones? I am a better one. I am talking like a madman, with far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless beatings, and often near death. Five times I received at the hand of the Jews 40 lashes, less one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from the Gentiles, non-Jews. Danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from all these other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches, like this one in Corinth. Who is weak? Am I not weak? Who is made to fall? Am I not indignant? So if we zoom out a little bit, we see that the weakness is not merely this thorn in the flesh, though it is that. If you zoom out, you see Paul's dealing with all sorts of weakness, all sorts of frailty, all sorts of calamity. If you zoom out even further, you see that Paul is taking heat from these false teachers in Corinth for his personality, for his style, for his ministry. The Corinthians say, Paul, your bodily presence is weak and your speech is of no account. They accuse Paul of being unskilled in speech. He's so bad that he can't even charge for his rhetoric. He can't even charge to have people come and listen to his speaking. That's how poor of a speaker he is. And so Paul's weakness, it inflicts pain, it's persistent, it's textured and varied, it's coming from all different directions, and it's observable by others. So that's Paul's weakness. So let's think about our weaknesses. And if we borrow from verse 10, Paul gives some categories for weaknesses. He says, weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. And all of these things he thinks of as weaknesses in his life. So let's think about insults. We have things about us that are quirky. They're idiosyncrasies. They set us apart from others. People look at us and they think, well, that's strange. Okay, other insults. People may treat you like you're unimpressive, like you're boring, you're drab, you're unintelligent. You don't know how to use one of those curlers. You may draw fire because you don't work outside the home or because you do work outside the home. You may not fit the mold of your neighborhood or your office or your family or, sadly, even a local church. And so you experience insults. Paul identifies with that and calls them weaknesses. Hardships. Mental illness or paralyzing fear or anxiety or chronic health issues or unrelenting pressure from raising children or the isolation of feeling alone most of the week or overwhelming demands on your schedule or feeling outmatched by the responsibilities that you have before you or boredom, right? Just a life of repetition without variety that just makes you feel claustrophobic. So there are hardships that Paul identifies as weaknesses. And then there's persecution. There's harassment, perhaps, if you follow Jesus and the people around you don't, and they don't understand you, and so you experience a little bit of shade. Or marriage or relational conflicts that won't stop. Or relational dynamics at work that put you in an awkward position. There are a variety of ways that we experience persecution from others. And then calamities. There's this pandemic that happened a few years ago, and there's all the attending conflicts and hardships that came as a result. There are significant financial pressures that don't let up. There are marriage compromising or ending conflicts that we walk through. So there's a variety of weaknesses, and I want us to feel at this point that it's not just sort of these weird personality things or something, but we see weaknesses as anything that makes us feel frail, anything that makes us feel weaker. That's what Paul has in mind here. And so the question is, what are we tempted to do with these weaknesses? When we identify them, what are we tempted to do? I think there's two. I think sometimes we settle with our weaknesses. So we can be secure with our messiness and happy with that. We'll talk about this in a minute, but it's almost become attractive to embrace your mess. And I think there is some goodness in embracing the mess. But it can move in a direction that's unhealthy. So if there's a persistent sense of, here I am, this is the real me, take it or leave it. Like, there can be a little bit of an edge of pride or arrogance in that as well. So we can wrongly settle with our weaknesses. And we may need to be confronted a little bit here. On the one hand, it's okay to not be okay. On the other hand, it's not okay to stay that way. Like, we want to be on a trajectory towards growth where possible, because not all our weaknesses are under our control. Some of our weaknesses may be our own sin, our own stubbornness. Some may be external that we're just walking through. But where we can be on a growth trajectory, we want to be on a growth trajectory. The other thing we can do is resent them. We can resist weaknesses at all costs. We can try to hide them, pretend they don't exist, just bury them under the pillow and move on. We can try to do anything we can to resist these weaknesses and put them away. That's not what Paul holds up for us either. Paul holds up to us an alternative and calls us to follow him. He's able to boast or gladly exalt in the weaknesses of his life. That's what he says in verse 9. In verse 10, he says, I've learned to be content with weaknesses. I've learned to think well of them, to think of them in a pleasing way. That's why I mentioned at the beginning that how do we think of these weaknesses as a friend, as an ally? So how does Paul do this? He's focused on Christ's boundless power. Jesus says to Paul tenderly, Paul, I won't take this thing away. This thorn in the flesh, I won't take it away. But my grace, that is my loving kindness, is enough for you. It's sufficient for you. Because my power, my strength, my might is made perfect. It is fulfilled or accomplished or realized or experienced in your weakness. My power is going to be felt by you in your weakness, in your frailty, in your calamity. In other words, we can expect Jesus to show up in all these areas of weakness, no matter what they are. It's in our weakness that Jesus' power, strength, and might break forth in our lives in a way that just makes us say, wow, what has he done here? So let's think about what this would look like. Here's two scenarios. Scenario one, Sunday night rolls around. You have lunches to prep. You have homework to supervise. You have a work meeting to prep for in the morning. You have a toddler meltdown to manage. You have no clean laundry. You can see your 9-year-old is worried about something and you should really lean in, but you don't think you have the time to do it or know how. You haven't reconciled with your husband from an argument you had that morning. You feel tapped. You feel impatient. You're grumbling. Self-pity is welling up in your heart. You're frustrated. You're envious of others who certainly don't have these issues. And all of these things are pouring out of you. And in those moments, you're asking, there is no way one person could possibly manage all of these things. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. There's no way. So how do you get from there to boasting gladly in those feelings of weakness, being content with weakness? Or scenario number two, your pregnancy isn't going well. The OB puts you on bed rest. How are you going to manage? You have other older children at home. It was challenging enough to keep up with all the responsibilities before bed rest. How in the world are you going to get into it now? So feelings of isolation that already filled most of your week are now going to get a lot worse, because now you need to pull back from those few things that you could do to experience community. And so you realize the temptation to drink a little bit more often than you should returns, which you feel every time the pressure in your life rises. And you know that that escape is foolish. You know that it leads nowhere helpful, and it's a short-lived distraction, but it's the familiar coping mechanism that you're used to. And so how do you get from those legitimate areas of pain to boasting gladly in weakness? How do those weaknesses, all of them, and they're varied, but they come together, how do you process through those? How do you boast gladly in weakness? How do you be content in weaknesses? How do those hardships become friends? Well, in verse 9, Paul says it's because we can expect Christ's power to show up in all those areas. We can expect him to show up. Therefore, because Christ's power will show up in weakness, therefore, I will boast gladly of those weaknesses, so that the power of Christ will rest upon me. It's when I acknowledge my weaknesses, don't try to run away from them, but acknowledge they're there, acknowledge they're painful, and then expect Christ to show up in the middle of them. That's how Paul moves from despair to rejoicing, because he's longing for Christ's power to be on display. So what does this look like, actually? Well, if you're a Christian, and by that I mean you've come to some sense that you need to be right with God, that something's broken in that relationship, and you turn and you trust him, well, then you're able to experience more power than you could before. Because God does something in our life when we turn to him in that way. And there's more power than meets the eye in those of us who trust Christ. There's more resource. There's more resources that we can tap into. And so in either of those scenarios, you can slip away to your bedroom and you can drop to your knees and you can pray. And you can acknowledge to God how painful the weaknesses are, and how much you long for them to go away. But you can also ask him to strengthen you by his Spirit, with his nearness, through his word. Last week, the kids had their last soccer game. And Caleb is our 10-year-old. He's a sweet kid. He's a rule follower. He tries to understand what's happening. He's pretty good at soccer, but he really loves the relationships. And so he's playing in the game, and the other team has no subs, and Caleb bumps into this one kid. It was the best player on the other team. And this kid had fallen down a few times. He did a few of those soccer flops where he's on the ground and he's crying. And I can see Caleb is feeling awkward because he's crying on the ground. And so the ref comes up, and Nicole sees the ref, point to the sidelines to Caleb. Mm-hmm. And Nicole said, I think he maybe just got pulled out of the game. And I was like, that doesn't happen in 9-year-old soccer. But sure enough, Caleb was on the sideline. And so I walked over to him, and at first he said, what, Dad? And then I sat down next to him, and he sat down next to me, and then the tears came out. And he knew what had happened. He knew why he got pulled out of the game, but he didn't really understand why he got pulled out of the game. But here's the thing. Now, it's the last game of the season. There's a minute left in the game. So I'm thinking, this is like a terrible last taste in your mouth for a soccer season. And so the game's over, and they're shaking hands, and he's not ready to get up yet. And so I'm talking with him and saying, listen, I know you didn't push him. You know you didn't push him. Go up and take the trophy that's yours. You guys won the game. You deserve the trophy. And he's able to process in that moment, okay, some people on this field think I did something on purpose wrong, but Dad knows what actually happened. I know what actually happened. And that gives courage in the moment to go do the right thing and to accept the trophy and to touch base with the referee. And this is what we get in prayer. We get the presence of God. Mm-hmm. We access his very presence and we bring him with us into all the areas of weakness. And when he comes there, we begin to see things. And here's what you might see in areas of weakness. You might see righteousness. It's like fruit of the Spirit coming out of your life that you know is not coming from you. Joy and peace and patience and kindness and gentleness and self-control. You're seeing them flow out of your life and you know, I'm not the origin of this. The Spirit is working through me. Or you might begin to see peace that outmatches the stress of the moment. You're like, I don't know where it's coming from, but there's a sense of calm and peace that's coming into the circumstances. They haven't really changed. You're just feeling more peace. Or you lean into a relational conflict. Does this happen to you? And you realize, oh, we're way further down the road than I thought. It's clear that God has been at work in this other person's heart and prepping them for this conversation, and it goes way easier than I thought it was going to go. Or you may realize that Jesus causes you to accomplish far more than you thought was humanly possible. You look at your week and you're like, there's no way I can get this all done. This is completely unrealistic. And you flop into bed on Sunday night and you realize, wow, it happened. I don't know how, but God was at work. Or friendships. You might see God's grace as people show up to you with encouragement and with practical help that take a little bit of the edge off of the weaknesses. Or you just sense this resolve well up in your heart, this determination to press forward one foot in front of the other and to trust God to work in your circumstances. So around your tables in a minute, I want you to just talk about practical or specific ways you've seen Christ's power show up in areas of weakness so that you can explore that in a more concrete way. But here's what Nicole and I, here's a little bit of autobiography for us. We moved to D.C. in 2007, and we thought we were just going to be here for a few years and then retreat back to the small towns we grew up in. We ended up falling for this church family, and then in time, learning to love this city as well. D.C. is hungry. I love it. There are people here who are still idealistic enough to think that we can change something, that something can happen here, that we can change the world. I love that. DC is concerned. People in DC are concerned about policies and people and education and art and good food. There's a concern in the hearts of DC people. DC is also diverse, wonderfully so. And that's a blessing. But DC has issues. We're status people. We need to be in C.S. Lewis's inner ring constantly. We long for power. We long to be close to power. We long to look strong. We need to be busier. We need to be smarter, wealthier, trendier than the people around us. And this leads us to mask up, to construct something about ourselves, to set aside our weaknesses and just to help people see what we want them to see. And we feel the discrepancy of that. We feel that it's inauthentic. And deep down, we don't want to be that way. And so one rebellion against that has been this movement of, I'm messy and it's okay. That messiness has become attractive. And there's, like I said, there's some goodness in that. We want to deal honestly with who we are. We want to be honest about the areas of weakness and hardship. We want to be transparent about those things. But it can also lead to a kind of honesty that doesn't include striving in areas of weakness. And we don't want our brokenness to be the final chapter. We want to be looking for Christ's power to become, to come into those areas of weakness. So we want to be honest with weakness, but we also want Christ to come into that and to bring wholeness and to demonstrate his power in the middle of that. Expect Christ's power to show up in your weaknesses and vulnerabilities. I'm going to end with, you heard about these protesters in London who went in and threw the tomato sauce on Van Gogh's sunflower painting. So that afternoon, you may know or may not, the London Museum issued a statement, and they said, the Van Gogh painting is fine. And everybody's wondering, how is that even possible? And they said, well, there's damage to the frame, but the painting itself is unharmed. Because we anticipated that something like this could happen, and we put a very thin piece of glass over top of the painting. And so the tomato sauce hit the glass, destroyed the frame, but didn't touch the art. And as we talk about weaknesses and hardships, it's most important that we remember what Christ thinks of us. There is no condemnation for those who are in Christ. Right, the insults, the calamities, they can't touch what's inside. It's like this thin layer of glass that's over top, and that thin layer of glass is what Christ says about us. And so there's really nothing that can impact that because of that thin layer of glass. So as you talk about weaknesses, as you think about weaknesses, as you think about Christ's power in them, remember that Van Gogh painting, remember the work that Christ is doing, the masterpiece that each of you are, and that Christ is in this. And hardships and weaknesses will come. Remember what Christ says about us, and remember that he's committed to you, that he's committed to demonstrate his power through weakness. So let me pray. Father, I thank you for the truth of your word. You're so kind to reveal things to us. And that's why we love the Bible, because it tells us about you. It tells us what you're like. It tells you what you think of us. It tells us what you're trying to do in the world. And in the Bible, we have an opportunity to know our God, to know you, and to treasure you. And so I pray that any time we spend in your word would lead us not just to new knowledge, but to new levels of relationship and connection to you, our God. And I pray for these women as this year, as they think about enough. The reason that we are enough is because of what Christ has accomplished on our behalf. And we can be okay with weaknesses. Where possible, we want to grow through them where we can. But we also know that there are many hardships in our lives that are completely external, and we just need to trust you to pull us through them. And so I pray that you would strengthen each of these women to expect you to show up powerfully in any and every area of weakness in their lives. We pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. Amen. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, ladies, we have a few minutes. So Christina is passing out some questions. Okay, from Tom's? Yes, okay. We had a little other communication this morning. So you can use these, and then I'll let you know.
What are some concrete examples of Jesus' power of showing up in our
weakness?
What are some concrete examples of Jesus' power?